Chapter 20. Your sister is looking for you, John says. Django, seated on a bench in front of the main wedding pavilion, pulls a face, though he doesn't try to push to his feet. Silas already warned me, he says. I'm fine. John doesn't say that that's likely why Arla won't hold back when she finds him. With a soft snort, he sinks down next to Django, looking up at the elegant arches of the pavilion as a handful of workers drape the beams with garlands of flowers. The white blooms shine against the dark wood, burnished by the afternoon sun, and he thinks about what will happen here tomorrow, but it's hard to be nervous when it feels right. Going to run screaming the night before the wedding? Django asks after a long second. He's not looking at John, his attention focused on the distant walls, where a handful of Mandalorians are just heading out on patrol. John considers the question, then Django. No, he says quietly, pauses, and then asks, do you want me to? Django snorts. Mandalorians have always fixed their own problems, he says. We don't need Jedi or the Republic to do it. That's true enough, John will allow, but Mandalorians seem to cause all their own problems too, he says. That startles a laugh out of Django, and he slumps back on the bench, tipping his head up towards the sky. Maybe, he admits, letting his eyes slide closed. Breathes out, and then says, a little gruffly, Jaster's only been thinking about our people every single day since I first met him. He never thinks about what he wants. It's always right and wrong, and how he can help the Mandalorian people do better, be better. John knows, objectively, what Jaster's story is. He killed a corrupt superior officer, was exiled from Conquered Dawn for it, went on to write the Super Commando Codex and revise the Canons of Honor. Those, the movement he founded, it led to his election as Mandalore, the start of the Civil War with the Death Watch. The plain facts give only the barest outline of the man behind them, though. Jaster is honorable and ruthless and cunning. He's kind and driven in a way that makes John a little breathless, and the softer side of him loves history, wants knowledge with a voraciousness that's only matched by Madame New in John's experience. Jaster is good and devoted to his people the same way John is devoted to the Order, and that makes it a little easier to care for him. Jaster knows. He understands. The Order will always be John's lodestone, and the Mandalorians will always be Jaster's, and around the edges, there's space for them to be who they want to be. To be together, John thinks, and rubs his thumb over the inside of his arm, where Jaster's bracer will sit after tomorrow. It must be difficult, John says quietly, to love him in a different way. Django's expression twists, and he rakes a hand through his hair, very determinedly not looking over at John. Griff, JT, he mutters, and for a moment, John thinks he's going to shove to his feet, walk away. He doesn't, though, just closes his eyes and says, I know the Canons of Honor back to front. I can recite the whole slag-damned codex, but Griff, it's words. Jaster's what matters. Arla and Miles and Silas. Me. I'm a true Mandalorian, because like hell I'm letting Jaster face Tor alone, but he doesn't finish. He doesn't need to. Everyone does things for their own reasons, John says, and leans down. There's a broken piece of flowering vine in the dirt, and he picks it up, turns it over in his fingers as he studies the blossoms. They're pale cream, up close, with soft rose centers, and he smiles a little, then reaches for the Force. His fingertips bleed green, and the vine shivers, twists. For some people, their worlds are small, and one person outweighs the world. For some people, the whole world matters more than one person. There's a long moment of silence, and then Django says, wary, and you don't care about that. John hums. Both of those points of view are extremes. Both of them hurt more than they help. But most people find a path in between. Django takes a breath, slow. And what if I hurt people? He asks, watching John. What if I picked Jaster over a whole world and didn't give a damn? Glancing up, John meets his eyes steadily. Would you be asking me that if you didn't give a damn? He asks, and Django freezes. It makes John smile, just a little. Whatever you've done that you want Arla and Jaster's forgiveness for, he says, you should tell them, and just ask for it. You might have to work for it, but if you have a path, you can follow it. Without a path, you're lost in the darkness. He pushes up from the bench, crossing to the base of the pavilion's main support, and crouches down. The earth is soft from the recent rains, and it's easy enough to bury the vine's new roots, carefully hilling dirt around the stem. As soon as it's in the ground, the flowers shiver. The vine twists, and like a record of growth set on fast forward, it wraps itself around the pillar and rises, twining its way up and over the beams as flowers spill out along its length. John looks up at it for a long moment, then turns and heads deeper into the garden, leaving Django sitting in the sunlight. By the time John makes it back to their rooms, kicking off his muddy boots on the stone steps and slipping in through the garden door, Jaster is already in bed, back propped against the headboard as he reads. He glances up as John slides the door shut, and his smile is soft, warm around the edges. John, he says, marking his book and setting it aside. Did you eat? Miles said you were checking the tunnels. I ate while I was in the woods. John pulls the tie from his hair, running his fingers through it, and then pulls off his damp cloak and hangs it up. His pants are covered in thick, dark mud, too, and he grimaces as he strips them off, sets them and his shirt aside to be cleaned, and finds a pair of loose sleeping pants. It looks like someone was in the trees recently, but I can't tell if it was one of your men, a local, or someone else. When he turns around, Jaster is watching him, eyes dark. There's a weight to his attention, but he still says, "There's a fair number of locals who hunt for at least part of their food. It may have been one of them, but I don't like it regardless. The tunnels." John hesitates for a moment, then sinks down on the edge of the bed, and Jaster smiles at him, reaches out. The slow slide of his hand up John's thigh steals all of John's breath, most of his awareness, but he manages to swallow, then says, I didn't see any traces of people there, but there was a crest on the walls. It looked like the scar I saw on the assassin's cheek when they attacked me. Two parallel lines with another one slanting down through them. Surprise flickers across Jaster's face, and he reaches automatically for his pad. Did you? Yes, John says, a little amused. I told Miles. He said he would look into who used to own the compound. Jaster pulls a face, settling back against the pillows. As long as the next 12 hours are quiet, he says, wry, I don't care who they are or what they want. Half the guests are already in residence, and the rest will arrive in the morning. All we need is half a day, and then everything will be settled. 12 hours, John thinks, breathing out. That seems like both far too long to be on edge, and far too short a period with a wedding on the other side. Everything will end as it's meant to, he says, quiet. And Jaster smiles crookedly. As it's meant to doesn't always mean well, he counters. It isn't meant to. Sometimes things fail. Sometimes we have to try again. John curls his fingers against the blankets, then reaches out, and Jaster catches his hand, pulls him down beside him. When John curls in close to his warmth, Jaster wraps his arms around him, stroking John's bare back with long, gentle sweeps of his hand, and John shivers. Jaster's hands are large, his fingers calloused, his grip strong, and John just wants in a way he's never allowed himself before. Jedi wisdom, Jaster asks, soft, and his lips brush the curve of John's ear. A gasp knots itself up in John's throat, slides back out as a fractured moan. It makes Jaster's grip tighten, his fingers splaying across John's back, and John presses his face into Jaster's shoulder, trying to keep his breaths even. A poor student's wisdom, John says, and the words rasp. It makes Jaster smile, though, and he kisses John's hair, the curve of his throat. His other hand slides up John's thigh, then pauses, and he takes a breath. "John," he says, careful, "do you want—" He doesn't finish, and after a second, John tips his head, looks up with a flicker of amusement. "Sex?" he asks. "Yes, but you'll have to show me what you like. I've never slept with anyone before." Jaster freezes, eyes widening. John doesn't need words, though. With a snort, he pushes, rises, and Jaster lets himself be pressed down against the pillows as John leans over him, one hand braced on his chest. He studies Jaster's expression for a moment, and then says, "That doesn't mean that I don't know what I want, Jaster." Jaster squeezes his eyes shut. "Yes, I know that," he allows after a second. "But, John, are you sure you want your first experience to be here and now, tied to a marriage that I've forced you into?" John pauses, watching him. "I asked Miles if Mandalorians waited until after marriage for sex," he says after a moment. Instantly, Jaster's eyes snap open, and he opens his mouth, closes it, and then laughs. "He must have adored that," he says, an edge of glee in his voice. "Did he try to jump out the window or just drink himself under the desk?" "He went straight for an unlabeled bottle," John says, mock serious, and Jaster chuckles. He studies John's face for a moment, then slides a hand up his back again, slow, considering John carefully. "I mean it," he says quietly, and raises his other hand to cup John's cheek, thumb smoothing along the slant of his cheekbone. "I've never expected you to sleep with me, John. If you want to gain experience, explore this part of yourself, you're welcome to do it with anyone you'd like. I'd like," John says, "to explore it with you, if you don't mind showing me." He pauses, but honesty seems like the best course right now, and after a second, he says, "You're the only person I've ever wanted to be this close to." Jaster tips his head, leans in, and John takes the kiss gladly. It's soft, but deeper than their others, more intent, edged with something that hooks under John's skin with thin trickles of heat. He breathes out, settling more fully on Jaster's chest as they kiss, and Jaster wraps an arm around him, brushes his hair back, kisses him slowly and thoroughly. "In that case," Jaster says, low, "I would be incredibly honored, John." John flushes, just a little, but can't fight a smile. Kisses Jaster again, enjoying the heat of him, the press of his fingertips heavy on John's skin, the focus of his full attention. "Tonight?" he asks, soft. Jaster hesitates, fingers curling against John's skin, and he swallows, breathes out. Leaning in, he rests his forehead against John's and closes his eyes, expression torn. "If you'd like," he says. "Anything you'd like, John. If you prefer to wait, though, or simply get used to each other first, that's perfectly fine as well." John considers, then nods, shifting. He sinks down onto the mattress beside Jaster, and Jaster immediately gathers him up in his arms, pulls him close, and tucks John in against his chest. "After the wedding," John says, sliding a hand over Jaster's broad shoulders. "When everything is done, and we have time." With a quiet chuckle, Jaster turns his face into John's hair, kisses the curve of his jaw. "Miles will very much appreciate us not sleeping in tomorrow," he allows, and tightens his grip, breathing out slowly. "Miles and I thought to take a honeymoon on a safe planet, to draw Tor's attention away from the capital. It should be far quieter, and we'll have all the time we could want." John smiles, small but warm, and presses his face into the curve of Jaster's throat. "I can't wait," he says, soft, and Jaster tightens his grip, breathes out. "Nor can I," he says, a confession, raw around the edges, as he presses his fingertips into John's skin. "Mandalore," the new Countess Wren says, and then hesitates like she caught herself. 15 and bold, Jaster thinks, bold enough to walk right into the enemy's stronghold with only 2 guards at her back. Ursa Wren has her mother's courage, and it's wasted on a craven bastard like Tor. "Countess," he says formally, and offers a hand. Congratulations on your ascension, and my condolences for your loss. Your mother was an incredible woman. Something flickers across Ursa's face, and after a second, she smiles, reaching out to clasp Vambrace's with him. Thank you, Mandalore, she says. She always had quite a lot to say about you. Jester snorts. And I heard quite a lot of it, he confirms, dry. She could swear more extensively than anyone I ever met. It was incredibly impressive. One of Ursa's guards, an older woman in close-fitted red armor, closes her eyes like she's in pain, and Ursa raises a hand to hide her grin. Thank you for the invitation, she says, and flicks a glance over the other guests arrayed across the lawn. Her gaze is careful, lingers on the handful of true Mandalorians scattered around the edges, and Jaster can almost see her trepidation, even if she has a good poker face. Concord Dawn is a neutral planet, he says, soft, and Ursa freezes. My invitation was honestly meant, Countess. You have nothing to fear from my people. Ursa swallows, but after a second, she nods firmly. I know, Mandalore, you wouldn't go against your own laws, she says, steely around the edges. Pauses, and then says, Congratulations on your marriage. Jaster smiles and, It's political, it's for a purpose that he's marrying John. But at the same time, he thinks of John's weight on his chest last night, waking this morning as John slid out of bed before dawn to meditate, and, well, it feels like the start of 100,000 mornings to come, and Jaster finds he's entirely looking forward to them. Thank you, Countess Wren, he says. John isn't visible, was caught by Zarin and the Armorer right after breakfast, and hasn't reappeared since, but Jaster has faith he will. Once you meet my husband, I believe you'll like him. Ursa gives him an odd look. The Jedi? She asks, careful, and her other guard shifts, expression shifting towards exasperation, like they want to reach out and elbow Ursa but can't manage to do it subtly. Jaster chuckles, and the strangeness of it has settled for him, a little, but seeing the reactions of the guests has been entirely entertaining. Yes, my Jedi husband, he agrees lightly, and catches a flicker of blonde and red, then turns. Adonai. Mandalore Mareel, Adonai says, perfectly polite. Neither of his daughters are in armor, which isn't surprising given their age. Neither is he, however, and Jaster considers him for a long second. Adonai is renowned for his skill on the battlefield, but given the length of the war, the rising pressures of the new Mandalorian movement on Kalevala, it's not surprising to see him bend slightly to their influence, although there's still a blaster holstered at his belt. Adonai inclines his head deeply, then slants a look at Ursa and pauses. One of her guards stiffens, hand falling to their vibroblade, but Ursa takes a half step back and reaches out, touching their arm before they can draw. Duke Kreese, she says politely. Countess Wren. Adonai flicks a narrow look at the guard, then rests a hand on his older daughter's shoulder. These are my daughters, Bo-Katan and Satine. It's a pleasure to meet you, Countess, Satine says, perfectly cordial, while Bo-Katan looks like she'd rather be anywhere else. Jaster doesn't entirely blame the girl, honestly. Thankfully, before he starts regretting any more of his life's choices, Miles appears on the edge of the crowd and catches his eye, and Jaster breathes out in silent relief. Excuse me, I believe I'm needed, he murmurs. When Ursa tenses, though, he says smoothly, If you'd like to accompany me, Countess, I believe I can introduce you to my daughter Arla. She's been quite admiring of your clan's armor. Ursa can't entirely hide her relief. I'd be glad to meet her, Mandalore, she says, and slides past Adonai, hurrying to catch up with Jaster as he crosses the grass. Don't mind Adonai, Jaster tells her lightly, slowing slightly so she can keep up. He used to be far more interesting. I'm afraid the years have made him as boring as poorly baked white bread. Mandalore, Miles says, exasperated, even as Ursa gives a startled laugh. He's attending your wedding at the last moment. He isn't even wearing armor, Jaster says, indignant. I wouldn't show up to a funeral naked, Miles. You wouldn't? I find that perfectly in character, my liege. Jaster sighs, pointedly loud. If you called me over here solely to mock me, Miles, I'm going to go listen to the clan Nost leader talk about the one time one of their ancestors became Mandalore 3,000 years ago. I would never call you over solely to mock you, Miles says sincerely. I can multitask, and it would be a waste of my time. He ignores Jaster's exasperated huff and says, Your children are plotting something again. It's giving me ulcers, and I don't even know what it is yet. Jaster follows the jab of his finger, then pauses, his own edge of suspicion flickering. Django and Arla are tucked away in a corner beneath a beam spilling cascades of white flowers, heads bent together, an air of intent about them that never spells anything good for Jaster's peace of mind. It does indeed look like they're up to something, in a way that's wholly alarming, and Jaster winces. At least, he offers, with all the dignity he can muster. John isn't with them. Miles snorts. That's why it's only ulcers and not a migraine, he says dryly, and checks his calm. Zarin says she's bringing John now, if you think you've offended enough of the guests. I think I greeted all of them, Jaster says with a faint frown, turning to cast a look across the crowd. Most of them are in armor, at least, and all of them seem pleased enough to be here, though Jaster has been the target of incredulous and disbelieving glances all morning. But he had expected that, considering who he's marrying. Political marriages aren't uncommon, though, and they'll adjust quickly enough once everything is settled. No one's complained that I've heard, Miles acknowledges. Even... oh. Alarm flickering, Jaster turns to find what caught Miles' attention, then freezes like his feet have been bolted to the ground, breath catching in his chest. John is just emerging from the main part of the compound, Zarin and Silas with him, and... he's beautiful, Jaster thinks, feeling a little like he's just been clubbed over the head with that knowledge. John is beautiful, his unusual features highlighted by the way his hair is braided back and twined with small green gems that catch the light. His wedding clothes are greens and soft blues, enough like Jedi robes that there's no mistaking what he is, and he's carrying his lightsaber openly on his hip, a tall, striking figure Jaster can't pull his eyes away from. Breathe, Mandalore, Miles says, amused, and when Jaster manages to drag his gaze away from John, it's to the sight of Miles's deep amusement, Ursa with a hand over her mouth again to cover her own smile. I hope Django and Arla give you twice as many ulcers, he tells his aide, then pushes through the murmuring crowd, heading straight for John. John turns towards him like it's instinct, and Jaster can't imagine ever looking away from him again. John, he says, holding out a hand, and John smiles, small, and takes it, linking their fingers as Jaster draws him in close. I'm not late, am I? He asks a little self-consciously. Zarin made a last-minute change. You're incredible, Jaster says with full honesty, and leans in, resting their foreheads together. John flushes, but his fingers curl lightly around Jaster's elbow, and his scarred mouth tips into a smile. So are you, he says, soft, and Jaster smiles. If you're ready, he murmurs. Miles has the back area ready for the exchange of vows. John nods without pulling away, and Jaster watches the way his lashes dip and then rise, gets caught in the winter sky blue of his eyes. He can't help but reach up, cupping John's cheek, and John curls a hand over his, breathes out. We should do it soon, he says, and Jaster chuckles. More things that will give Miles ulcers, he asks, and John's smile is a lovely thing, crosses his face like sunlight breaking. I feel, John says gravely, like most things do. Jaster laughs, pulling back and tucking John's arm through his. He has a delicate constitution, he says, and tips his head at Miles as Miles approaches them, Django and Arla behind him. I believe that's all the witnesses, so shall we? John nods. A crack, so loud and sudden that it almost steals Jaster's hearing, and he jerks, recognizing the sound of a blaster rifle. Green blazes to life, to light, and the blue bolt buries itself deep in the earth with a hiss. Jaster doesn't even hesitate. He grabs John and Ursa, throws himself down behind a table as there's a concerted, practiced rush to take cover, armored bodies diving for any place that can serve to block the shots. Even as they do, though, there's a shout, and Tori goes tumbling back from the door of the compound, firing desperately into the crowd of bodies, suddenly shoving their way through. In the same moment, The burn of multiple jetpacks sounds, and another squad drops down from the sky, landing right in the middle of the lawn and immediately lunging for the guests. "Hells," Miles says, furious, and shoves up to aim and fire at a man in brown armor. "We haven't even gotten to the karking wedding, and the slagging Death Watch wants to ruin all my kriffing preparations." "It's not the Death Watch," Ursa protests, pushing up from where Jaster flattened her to the earth. She looks for her guards, spots them a short distance away, and then grabs for her own blaster, rolling up into a crouch. "Tor would have warned me, and he didn't say anything." "Then who the hell is it?" Jaster says, grim, and leans up to take another shot with fury bubbling in his chest. There are 6 bodies closing, though, and he curses, throws himself back as a detonator lands right in front of the table, grabbing for Ursa because she's closest, but John is gone. An unseen force throws the detonator back into the group, and John lunges, lightsaber blazing back to life in an instant. He hits the squad like a hurricane, sheer force and furious grace, and Jaster loses all his breath in an instant as John twists through the blaster bolts, ducks a vibroblade, spins, and throws a fully armored body over his hip with a rattling thud. Then he's up again, ducking between another pair, leaping. The detonator goes off directly under their feet, but John passes right through the explosion as if he's a ghost, lands, lunges to put himself between Bo-Katan and a big man with a blaster, the burn of his lightsaber deflecting it away. A slash of one hand sends the next volley jerking to a halt, and John whirls through the frozen bolts, twists, throws his hand out. Blue reins up towards another knot of enemies still hovering above, and they either go scattering or go down. A hand on the back of Jaster's armor yanks him back down behind the table, half an instant before a blaster bolt can take his head off. "Mandalore," Miles says, loud. From that tone, it's not the first time he's said it. Muttering a curse at himself, Jaster nods, catches a glimpse of Arla grappling with a big Trandoshan Mandalorian, and rises, staying crouched behind the bare cover. "Keep the Countess safe," he orders, and Miles signs his agreement. "Reinforcements?" "There's fighting in the compound, too," Miles says grimly. "The other squads are trying to get here, but it may take a while. They must have come up through the tunnels, taken out the guards on the other end." "Or they knew of tunnels we didn't," Jaster says, "because none of them should have ended up inside the building itself." He takes a shot, downs a woman before she can stab John in the back, and doesn't let himself linger. "There are too many. We need a path to the ships." "We can't get a path to the ships. They're coming from that direction." And then, with a cry, a body whirls over the wall, burning green igniting as she falls. A Bothan woman, Jaster thinks, and jerks his blaster up. Fires and kills a man about to take a shot at her. A Bothan Jedi, in a sleeveless tunic. And behind her is another figure, this one in white and cream, her long brown hair whirling around her as she touches down. No lightsaber, but she's clearly a Jedi as well, and a slash of her hand sends 3 of the attackers slamming back into the wall, so hard it makes Jaster want to wince. "Vagrant," the Bothan Jedi calls, laughing. "Seems like you need a hand." John turns, startled, and almost freezes. "Master Venari, Master Fae," he says in clear surprise, and Venari huffs, blocking a blade, then kicking the woman into a table. "Heads up," she warns, and John twists, catching a blade on his lightsaber. Jaster takes the bare moment as they strain to shoot the man, and then there's a body in front of him, too close. He ducks back, long knife slicing right over his head, and feels another body lunging. With a shimmer of light, another form in Jedi robes appears, the air shivering like he just pulled back a veil. A blue blade ignites with a crackling hum, and he cuts through the attacker, turns. "Dooku," he calls, and from the shadows of the trees, another lightsaber ignites as well. An enemy Mandalorian goes flying, and a dignified-looking man with dark hair parries a spray of blaster bolts. "Mind yourself, Nico," he warns sharply. And the Jedi next to Jaster scoffs, but catches a blaster bolt with a twist of his wrist, sends it arrowing straight into a woman about to shoot Jango. "Mandalore," Nico says, sharp. "I take it these aren't your men." Jaster snorts, stepping away from his opponent as they drop. "Hardly, Master Jedi. There are children here. Not exactly the best time for a firefight." Nico nods, apparently satisfied. "Then consider this our apology for arriving unannounced," he says, and turns, throwing himself into the thick of things without hesitation. JT, Jaster thinks, but he can't quite muster up the exasperation that should come with the word. End of chapter 20.